All right, let's head over to the Zoom line here. I'm going to have to get this Zoom line sponsored. I'm so used to in radio saying, all right, welcome back to the car dealership of the week. Sponsorship of the studio is always a car dealership. How you doing, Joe Sinnott?
I am doing fine, Jason. It is a great day here in the Commonwealth of PA.
I wish radio and podcast would just merge together as one, because sometimes, you know, you're wearing four hats and you leave two on. And, you know, there's different structure involved. There's different things. Well, like we were talking about before we got on the air here, we're not even on the air. We're recording here. See, it's, as a former editor, I want to be impeccable with my words at least. I threw on a collared shirt because I had a tank top on because I'm in Minnesota where the humidity is 190%. It's like Florida. And, when I put a collared shirt on in the oil and gas industry, I can still wear a hat and be professional. And we kind of chuckled about that. And you mentioned that you were just at an event with Mike Rowe, and he was commenting about kind of the same thing a little bit. Joe, tell that story, because that was a good story. And I think it's very important for people to realize that, sometimes you have to dress up when you go to church, or at least work.
Sure. And I want to be clear too. I wasn't at the event
that
Mike Rowe was at here, the big shindig, the big summit in Pittsburgh around energy and innovation. But Mike Rowe was there. So Mike Rowe of Dirty Jobs fame. And after the event, he shared something there on social media where he was retelling a conversation between him and his mother, who, again, his mother, of course, is, wondering what does he wear? What did he wear? What was he going to wear to this big event where the president of the United States would be, where, various business leaders representing, trillions of dollars of asset management would be. And, he assured her that he was actually going to wear a suit, to which she apparently replied, well, it's a suit that's not at least made of rubber, right? Because, of course, Mike Rowe, all of his time down in sewers and doing all these dirty jobs. So interesting there that, again, what you wear, again, in all walks of life and in all events, comes into play. And, the second piece of that, Jason, was, he referenced, I don't know, I think his mom may have brought it up, referenced one of our two U.S. senators here in Pennsylvania, that being John Fetterman, who, of course, famously does not wear a suit all that much, despite what his colleagues there in the Senate do. So anyway, so that was sort of the, again, that, that marriage of, suit wearers and, true blue collar folks, which, if that's not Pittsburgh in 2025, again, the marriage of, whether you're wearing coveralls, whether you're wearing a three-piece suit, you're welcome here in Pittsburgh, because that's that that confluence of blue collar and white collar and technology and energy that, again, happy to be a part of here in southwestern Pennsylvania.
We'll talk about the Energy Innovation Summit and Trump in Pennsylvania in a couple minutes here, but as an executive coach, obviously, dress the part, and when you look good, you feel good. There's a lot of different cliches that can go into dressing up and dressing the part and all these different things. And when you were talking about the Mike Rowe conversation he had with his mom just now, It recalled, I believe it was Stephen Colbert, and it might even been a Steve Carell. I'm thinking of a few different people, George Carlin, maybe, maybe George Carlin. Anyways, obviously you can tell I watch a lot of interviews with comedians, but when they go do something in front of the president, okay, because they all get invited at some point to do a White House dinner, or they're going to go do a roast or something along those lines, they always retell a story about the conversation they had with their mom when their mom says, are you going to look good? Are you going to be nice? And so when you come back to your mother, it's always about, it's about image and respect, and about, and by image, you're showing respect. You're showing, Joe, I mentioned that, when I went on my own, when I kind of left corporate America, which in North Dakota, we have, I think, two corporations. So that's not, it's a bigger small business I left. I had a rule for myself that if I called a meeting, I put on a tie. If somebody calls me for a meeting, I don't wear a tie. I might not even wear a collared shirt. It depends on who it is, what the meeting's about, and et cetera, because somebody wants my time versus I want someone's time. So when I want someone's time, I want to show them the respect, both non-verbally and verbally. Both, you know, verbally, I want to be prepared so I can, you know, speak articulately and be able to pitch them in a proper way. But also, when I wear a collar and a tie, I'm showing them that, boy, I took the time to dress up. I took the time to shower. I took the time, you know, to maybe do manicure up my nails a little bit so there's not dirt underneath. Oh, I've been called out on the dirt thing before. Oh, before a meeting, I had somebody grab my hand. We were meeting with these big publishers. I think it was in Pennsylvania. I think it was State College, Pennsylvania, actually. And who, by the way, were some of the nicest people, so it didn't even matter at the end of the day. But my business partner grabs my hand and he goes, "What's wrong with you?" He's like pointing at some dirt under my fingers, you know, and like, it made sense. You know, you want a good first impression. So I'll back down now and let you speak because you're the expert on this. Talk to me a little bit about that mother's respect and what that means in a professional way. Yeah.
Well, if we're talking about mothers, again, it's beyond respect. It's, you know, recognizing that, you know, maybe you don't agree with your mom all the time, but she's been around and she's probably got some insight. So, you know, you do well to at least listen to what she has to say. And again, going back to Mike Rowe's mom and hearing you talk about, you know, additional circumstances where what you wear, how you appear can, you know, make or break a first impression. You know, another person that Mike Rowe's mom brought up in this conversation to, again, make sure that he was going to be dressed properly if he were to meet the president was Zelensky, right? You know, president of Ukraine. And again, you know, how much time and energy was spent talking about the fact that he did not wear a suit to the White House a couple months ago. And again, regardless of whether you agree or disagree, like, we're not here to talk fashion, Jason, but what did it do? Well, it detracted from the mission that Zelensky had in showing up to the White House. So again, we can talk fashion all you want, but at the end of the day, you know, Zelensky did not, you know, have that go as he had hoped it would go, in part because of what he chose to wear. And, you know, you bring that back to the business world, and it's not just a matter of respect, as you're talking about. Obviously, that's key. But it's a question of, hey, is what you're choosing to wear diminishing the odds of you having success in whatever forum you're at? So whether you're the CEO and you're going to talk to frontline leaders and you made the perhaps mistake of, you know, wearing some fancy suit and fancy shoes that you're worried about getting dirty. Or, you know, conversely, like you're talking about, whether you show up to a business meeting and you didn't take the time to at least scrub your nails a little bit or shave or whatever the case might be, at the end of the day, you're doing yourself a disservice from, you know, nothing else, a selfish standpoint, Jason, because you've reduced the odds, you've reduced the focus, you've reduced, again, the chances of you actually accomplishing what you wanted to accomplish. So, again, that's how I view it is, hey, why not boost your odds of success in whatever environment you're in? And some of that starts with how you appear.
Yep. Mother's advice. And, you know, for me, I was raised a little bit too Catholic, I think, to accept Joe Fetterman's style of dressing, his dress style for a position that he has. But I guess I was raised too Catholic, so I read the book too much to judge him. So there's my Libra moment today. That
well, in fairness, Jason, sorry to interrupt, but you know, probably about 10 years ago now, during an episode of Pittsburgh Dad. So there's a weekly YouTube show. It's only a couple minutes long called Pittsburgh Dad. You know, sizable following here. But I remember there was one episode in particular where Pittsburgh Dad is yelling to his kids, say, "Hey, you know, it's ready for church. You know, it's time for church. You know, time to get ready for church. Put on your collared shirt or your Steelers jersey." You know, it's basically like, and it's true, right? You know, you go to Mass here in Pittsburgh and it's, you know, again, you'll have people dressed up, you know, wearing, you know, more your typical Sunday best, but it seems equally acceptable, you know, on a Sunday, especially during football season, to also wear your Steelers jersey. So anyway, you know, that, remember that particular scene there from many years ago. But again, I think it encapsulates that marriage of, again, blue collar, white collar, sort of Pittsburgh culture, if you will.
Well, it's like I say, it's good not to judge, but at the same time, you know, it's hard not to in today's day and age. But Trump was in Pennsylvania a couple days before the anniversary or a couple days after the anniversary of the date of the assassination attempt. Talk to me a little bit about what's going on, Joe.
Yeah, well, in terms of dates, yeah, he was here on the 15th of July, which or 15th or 16th, anyway, 2 days after, as you said, the anniversary of the assassination attempt up in Butler, about 30 or 40 minutes away from where Donald Trump was at Carnegie Mellon during the inaugural Pennsylvania Energy and Innovation Summit that was called by our other U.S. Senator, Dave McCormick, who brought together leaders from energy, business, technology, from giant investors. And they all came together to, talk primarily about the potential, the resources that Pennsylvania has from a people standpoint, from an education standpoint, obviously from a natural resources standpoint. And, they came together to, well, first and foremost, talk about the potential of Pennsylvania. But secondarily, and I would argue more importantly, to talk about and announce over $90 billion of investments in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania tied to energy and technology. And of course, the hottest topic there is out there, Jason, AI. So that occurred here again at Carnegie Mellon University. The morning was filled with various panel discussions and a couple one-on-one discussions with, again, some of these titans of industry, if you will. And then in the afternoon, Donald Trump showed up and again had another panel that included those same business owners and several members of his cabinet. So again, a big to-do, certainly a very big spotlight on Pennsylvania, and some very real promises made, again, to the tunes of tens of billions of dollars.
And this was the Energy Innovation Summit, was that right?
Yeah, the official name was the Pennsylvania Energy and Innovation Summit, although some folks dubbed out innovation for AI, since again, we're talking innovation, we're talking technology, but it seems today in 2025 that all roads lead to AI. And again, by extension, the huge power demand that artificial intelligence proliferation will require in the coming decades.
I was raised a little too Catholic to not finish the sentence with, and all roads will end with AI as well, Joe. If they begin with AI, they're going to end with AI. Sorry, I had to get a little bit snarky there. So AI, that is a big deal. And that would make sense that it would be in your neck of the woods because of the natural gas and the amount of gas that's going to be needed to power AI. They're finding out now that they forgot to carry the one, so they need like 10 times as much energy that they were originally going to think. And so they're firing up some nuclear plants. And so it's very interesting to see what's going to happen because, oil and gas companies, they've been an energy company for over a decade, and a lot of them are just realizing it now. And I've often joked that I think in my lifetime, I'm still going to see Exxon, Chipotle, Verizon as one company. Because there's going to be so much diversification happening once they figure out, we've taken over the energy industry. Now we got to keep our shareholders happy. Well, let's go after Chipotle. Okay, that makes sense because ag is now like compliant, the compliance department for energy. Like it's a, well, renewables became the compliance department for a lot of energy companies too. And that's happening with agriculture in my neck of the woods because of ethanol and carbon sequestration. And so, when you're kind of doing that a little bit, that's why I'm saying that I do see, in 20, 30 years where you could have a Verizon, Chipotle, Exxon. But let's talk about now AI, and AI will run it all too. But AI is taking a lot of energy. It's laying off people. It's producing new opportunity. So the world is changing. Cats and dogs are reigning together and dancing together. So what's going on? What did you take away from the people you talked to, what you absorbed, what they're saying at the coffee shops? Because my understanding is that the town got taken over by energy professionals.
Sure. And I guess, obviously, Jason, we can talk, we can speculate, we can chat about AI for hours. So I guess the first thing I would suggest is if people are curious about this meeting of, again, I would argue, significant, powerful individuals, all that's out there publicly. You can do a quick Google, you can find the hours of conversation. It's all out there, publicly available. That's how I ingested the conversations from earlier this week, Jason. So again, I encourage your listeners there. If you want, again, unfiltered, unmodified thoughts from experts who know a lot more or can predict a lot better the future of AI than I certainly could, Jason. People again can turn their attention to the conversations from here in Pittsburgh. As far as my take, if I had to boil it down to either predictions or what I'm seeing or sensing, it's that it's unifying, right? I mean, I've used the word utopian in the last couple of days since the summit, but it's amazing to see the bipartisan or nonpartisan or apolitical, whatever you want to call it, coming together of people from both sides of the aisle or whatever cliche you want, because so much of this is a no-brainer. Now, obviously, there are plenty of people who will be negative Nancys about all of this stuff, and there were plenty of protesters certainly in Pittsburgh, and there were plenty of groups there that signed open letters to our governor Josh Shapiro and telling him not to go to this summit because all it's going to do is fuel the continued destruction of Mother Earth because of all the energy needs. But at the end of the day, Jason, I mean, this is undeniably positive. It is undeniably unifying, and for that reason, I mean, and again, this is a phrase that has come from other individuals, not me, but I've certainly latched onto it. And it's positive energy, Jason. I mean, you can feel the positive energy because you don't have to sift through politics necessarily to get to the heart of the matter, which is jobs, national security, stronger economy, and all of the things that can come from AI. So I'll pause there. Obviously, we can go a billion different directions here in terms of the potential implications of AI, but I think the overwhelming thing that I see again is that sort of the unifying potential of this opportunity that's in front of us.
Were these protesters fossil fuel, oil and gas protesters, or were they, rich people or wealthy people protesters? Were they capitalism protesters? Because in North Dakota, we've got this like weekly I hate capitalism protest that's been happening all summer long down at the post office and at the bridge where Moorhead, Minnesota, and Fargo, North Dakota were twin cities. We don't have three rivers like you. We've got the bridge. That's actually a approved protest place by the city. They actually have an area for people to stand and protest and that sort of thing. And so there's those. And then a friend of mine, his ex, who's now I think with a woman, they go do the Pride protests quite a bit, and they, so I'm just kind of wondering what kind of pro what protest what protest did you have, Joe?
That's a great question. Yeah, it's like the Baskin-Robbins, 31 flavors of protesting,
Exactly.
right? Well, I guess, Jason, to answer that question, I'll go back to what I said. This summit was unifying. People from, blue collar, white collar industries coming together. People who might lean red from a political standpoint, lean blue from a political standpoint, coming together. And I think from a protester standpoint, it was the same thing. It was unifying. So whether it was, from the environmental side of things, from the political side of things, whatever it was, they all came together in unity to because there was something at this summit that they could find to root against. That being said, Jason, I would say the primary protesters, at least the physical protesters on the ground, not the ones writing letters. They were more on sort of the environmental side of things. But the ones on the ground here in Pittsburgh, they were basically there because Trump was there. Donald Trump shows up at anything. That's going to bring certain people out. And a lot of their angle, a lot of their talking points surrounded the fact that Carnegie Mellon, again, a significant university, was hosting this event that Donald Trump would be at. And Donald Trump's actions here since returning to the White House, many of them have been targeted at universities. So whether it's, universities, whether it's funding, whether it's students who are there on visa or, they might be threatened. There were a lot of protesters that were tied to some of the Medicaid funding adjustments here that are forthcoming, thanks to the Big Beautiful Bill and all of those various things. So, like I said, a lot of different angles there. But this summit brought everybody together, whether you were protesting or whether you were there celebrating the potential of Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah, man. It's the 60s all over again. Absolutely. The colleges are protesting and and when you think back to the 60s, that was kind of when the golden age of television took off. Cable television was the 80s, but maybe even bled in the 90s a little bit. And by the golden age, you know, you got to get like at least 60% of the market, right? That takes it in. So television, of course, when it took off, you only had three stations, and so your news was very controlled. And so the protests were very segmented, very categorized, you know, Vietnam. And then, you know, it was almost like you could plan out the protests much easier if you were in the news and that sort of thing. Than now with social media, it's interesting that they're unifying that type of thing because there were so many micro protests happening since probably, I would say, George Floyd in my neck of the woods during COVID here in Minneapolis, that really, you know, in the same vein, COVID helped corporate America with Zoom and meetings and facilitate that sort of speed of the discourse. Same thing happened with protesters and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, man, it's the 60s all over again. Movies are going to cost $3 and graffiti everywhere and, you know, that sort of thing. But when you said I couldn't help think about Rodney Dangerfield and Back to School playing Thornton Mellon when you were talking about Carnegie Mellon at university is one of my favorite movies of all time. Back to School. I know what I'm doing tonight. I'm gonna watch that movie. It's so good. Movie's so good. I could watch it all the time. That and The Big Lebowski every single time. But so Trump in Pennsylvania, what came out of it? AI was that what came out of it? Did anything coal? I mean, did they say we're shutting down a coal plant or?
No, I think what, well, I guess two things came out of it. The first is, as I mentioned before, Jason, the, you know, $92 billion, I think it's up to, of announced investments in Pennsylvania. So, you know, in terms of the most tangible takeaways, it's those big dollar signs, which, you know, regardless of how you slice and dice it, that's a big number. And, you know, that's going to have some sort of positive implications, regardless of, you know, how much they all come to fruition as people think. So that's the first piece, the dollar piece. The second piece, Jason, in terms of, you know, the question of, all right, well, it's an energy and innovation summit. Is it just natural gas? Is it, as you said, coal? And again, unifying all the above, right? You know, all the above used to, you know, was a tagline for so long, but those investments, those billions of dollars investments weren't limited to natural gas investments. A lot of them were, you know, a lot of them did tie to, you know, natural gas fired power plants, but there was also announcements about billions of dollars to restart hydro facilities. Already in this part of the world, you know, there was talk of restarting nuclear facilities. Westinghouse, which is based in the Pittsburgh area, who again, I think is something like, you know, the only you know, domestic provider of a good chunk of nuclear technology, you know, to go into new nuclear power plants. Well, they were represented there. So nuclear, coal, hydro, natural gas, of course, all represented there, all tied to that $92 billion of investments. And again, all working together towards a common purpose or multiple common purposes, if you will, that again, first and foremost, mean more jobs, more security, and more, you know, I heard you mentioned the golden age of television there a couple minutes ago. Well, the tagline for this was, you know, ushering in a golden age of energy dominance. And that, I guess you could argue, was the you know, the underlying goal of all the attendees at the summit this week.
Westinghouse, nuclear. Who does hydro?
I don't know if there's any giant players, or if there are, I'm not privy to them, so.
And by the way, but my question is more of when you say hydro, you mean water, right? You don't mean hydrogen. You mean
Correct. Yes, good
water.
question here in this day and age, but yes. Hydroelectric in a state that is blessed with quite a bit of water.
I forget that, you know, obviously with Niagara Falls up there, powering a lot, people forget that not only is hydro clean, but it's typically one of the better sources of energy. And it's so funny that we haven't invested more into that. So when you bring it up, I'm glad to hear that that's starting to come around. Some of the advancements they've made in hydro with like vortex, deals is incredible, absolutely incredible, because it preserves the wildlife and it power. I mean, water just keeps flowing and it just flows. I mean, so anyway, all right, man. Let's see, what else do I got on here? I got on my notes here that the Marcellus Shale Coalition. I've got in my notes about that as well. That I know they got a couple events happening, and you're not an official spokesperson for them, but you're extremely active, and you get asked to moderate things from time to time for groups around the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. So what's going on with that Marcellus Shale Coalition group?
Well, biggest thing that they put on each year, Jason, is the Marcellus Shale Coalition Shale Insight Conference up in Erie, Pennsylvania. So about 2 hours north of Pittsburgh, where, again, the spotlight was shining this week. They have a conference that draws, I think, on the order of 700, 800 participants. Always a handful of protesters, too, as well up there. But, you know, similar to the Energy and Innovation Summit that brought, you know, some pretty big names together, that conference too brings some pretty big names together, but with a particular focus on Pennsylvania's natural gas resources. You know, the Marcellus Shale Coalition itself, its member companies, including my company, Winning Partners, are responsible, maybe not my company directly, but, you know, member companies of the Marcellus Shale Coalition are responsible for most of the molecules, like the vast majority, 90, 95% of the molecules that are, you know, produced and that flow through pipelines here in Pennsylvania. So, again, significant organization here that brings a lot of great insights together, but, you know, just like this week's summit, it wasn't just a bunch of talking. Yes, it's a bunch of talking. You know, what I find to be great about Shale Insight is sort of those extra conversations, those breakout conversations, the breakout sessions and workshops. So I'll be there as a participant, as, again, a member of the Marcellus Shale Coalition, as I have been for the last several of years. And certainly, you know, I can't imagine that there's going to be less interest in Shale Insight this year, given what occurred here in Pittsburgh this week with the big Pennsylvania Energy and Innovation Summit put on by Senator Dave McCormick. So for anybody that's interested in learning more, again, I encourage you to again, go ahead and Google Shale Insight or head over to the Marcellus Shale Coalition website and check out the agenda, check out the information. And if you're looking for a great place to be in mid-September, Erie, Pennsylvania, right there on the bayfront is a pretty good place to be in mid-September. So.
And it's the Energy Insights. Is that what it's called?
Shale Insight is the name of the event.
Shale Insights. Mm-hmm. Shale Insights in mid-September. And Erie, that's a nice town, blue-collar town from my memory. And is that where the hydro is?
No, at least some of the hydro that was talked about this week is not in, I think a lot of that was maybe more Northeast PA in different places. So
Don't know
what they have up in that neck of the woods when it comes to hydro.
I assume that Lake Erie is close to Erie. It's got to be close to each other, right?
That is a good assumption, and you are correct. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. All right. That's where I was going with it in my mind. So, it's been a while since I've been out to Pennsylvania. I used to do magazines out in Pennsylvania, and I want to say it was my second favorite state I've ever been to. And people always look at me weird and I'm like going, oh, it's a gorgeous state. I mean, the word that I would come up with is plush, like the foliage is plush, like the trees and the rivers. And it's just absolutely beautiful. And when I grew up, you know, I always thought Pittsburgh was a real dirty town. I mean, whether it was the Steelers or the coal or whatever it was, every single imprint that I had from literature to my school teachers made me believe that Pittsburgh was a dirty town. And when I got to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I swear to God, it was one of the most beautiful towns I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it was clean, the ballparks down there in the river area. I got stuck on the wrong road. And when you're flowing in big city traffic, it's not like you can just turn. You got to take 3 days to get around that mountain. And I think it was Washington or something. I don't know. We did a magazine down in Washington County. And there's a Washington, this name of the city. I can't remember. But either way.
Well, you've got Washington County, and then you've got the beautiful entrance into the city of Pittsburgh. If you're coming from the west, from the airport area, and you're basically driving underneath Mount Washington. So a lot of Washington references here in Southwest PA.
So my memory was right. Okay, I took the wrong turn.
Yeah, both accounts. Yeah, I think you're...
Yeah, I took the wrong turn, and I had to go around Mount Washington to get back to where I was going, to my hotel. And then, and then we did the magazine down in Washington. Very nice area, very nice area down there. So anyway, if anybody's looking at that, and just so you know, Bobby Knight, that's where he goes trout fishing, is in Pennsylvania, because apparently the limestone creates some sort of foliage or some sort of a plant that the trout absolutely loves, makes them nice and big and fat that basketball coaches love. So, I honestly, when you figure somebody who's got a lot of money and a lot of access and a lot of, sports access to that type of environment, and he picks, the Pennsylvania mountains as a place to go, you should perk up and listen. It's kind of like in our neck of the woods, some of the walleye fishing is some of the best in the, some of the best in the area. So everybody's got their little pockets of gold, if you will. So, anyway, anything you care to elaborate on that,
No, again, I just like, we can talk for hours about AI and its potential implications. I think I could talk for hours about the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and all of the wonderful things that make this state as great as it is. Although I think probably the biggest thing hearing you talk is, obviously I got my biases now towards Western Pennsylvania, but if we want to make a, give a bit of a nod to Eastern Pennsylvania, it is probably as we approach the 250th anniversary of the birth of the United States, it's probably not a bad time to recognize that, it all started here, right? If you will, from a United States standpoint in Philadelphia. In fact, I think that's a tagline or one of the taglines as we approach that 250 year mark come, well, what we're, again, less than a year from now when that big celebration happens. So, again, from the very beginning of our nation to today, a lot of good stuff coming out of Pennsylvania, Jason.
I don't know, man. Ben Franklin, didn't he bolt out of Philadelphia? I mean, the only thing that good that came out of Philadelphia was Ben Franklin. That it's a dirty town, man. I'm a Washington Commanders fan, so I gotta take my digs at the Philadelphia whenever I can. Actually, I do enjoy the western side much more than the eastern side. I'm Philadelphia's fine, but it's just too big for me.
Well, it's too close to New
It's a
Jersey, right? That's usually what I hear. Again, I grew up in New Jersey, so I can say that. Not that
Okay.
anybody else would stop from making disparaging remarks about New
Now,
Jersey, but
I will say this. We did a magazine in Harrisburg. We also did one in Easton, Pennsylvania, which is in Bethlehem country up there. And that's gorgeous. Up in Easton, Pennsylvania. I think the magazine we did featured Mario Andretti's kid or Mario Andretti. They've got nice places up there. They must be from there or something. And so yeah, Easton, Pennsylvania, that was a very nice town. And I believe that's on the east side, right? Easton, east side. That would make sense anyways. But anyway, we're not the Chamber of Commerce here for Pittsburgh or Pennsylvania, and definitely not Philadelphia. But let's try to be one for Montana, if you will. My word on the street that you were two states over from me as I make my summer residence in Minnesota. Now that I officially have a summer residence because I got rid of the North Dakota one, my son graduated, so I'm going on to the next chapter of my life. And having a place 45 minutes away from my son on a river is actually what I wanted to do. So, Montana, what's going on in Montana, my man? Were you there for business or pleasure? I just heard through the grapevine that you were out there.
It was business, even though there's, plenty of focus here on southwestern Pennsylvania. Occasionally there, I do escape the comfy confines of Pittsburgh. And yeah, that was a business trip. Pretty typical business trip. Worked with, one of my clients there, helped facilitate a 2-day offsite for leadership team. So again, even though there's a lot of stuff that you can do remotely with folks, nothing replaces being there in person. And again, much like the summit that occurred here in Pittsburgh, there can be a lot of fruit born from bringing key stakeholders, key leaders together in a room. Now, it's not a guarantee, which again is why I was out there helping to facilitate, because again, it doesn't just happen organically necessarily when you bring people like, again, leaders together. But in essence, it was helping to, make that offsite the best offsite possible, in terms of results, right? Actions. Just like, when you're asking about the summit here, in Pittsburgh, what came out of it? Well, it's the same thing for these offsite meetings that companies have all the time. Well, what comes out of it? is whatever momentum that was gained actually going to be sustained? And from a leadership coaching standpoint, that's my job, right, Jason? To make sure that the investments that they're making, on their own, let alone investments in leadership coaching and leadership development, make sure that those investments of time, energy, and money are sustained. So they don't just get together, they don't just have a nice conversation or series of conversations, or maybe ingest some, presentations, if you will, but that they can effectively translate it into action and be able to showcase and demonstrate those results to all of their stakeholders. So, again, very high level conversation, obviously not getting into the details of what I did there, but it's a pretty typical road trip for me, Jason, when necessary.
We've got some affiliates in Baker. Let's see where else. Glendive and Sydney. And there was one more as well. Four or five on the eastern side of Montana where the Bakken Shale play is. Sydney, Montana would be up in the kind of the hot spot, if you will. It's about 70 miles from Williston. And Williston would be the heart. Watford City and Williston would be the heart of the Bakken. And then as you get a little bit more west, you drive for 9 hours to get to the next town. You get more to the Billings area, and that's a big hub for all energy, coal, oil, gas, hydrogen, geothermal, you name it, because it's right in the center. And then as you get a little more west, you start getting to the national parks a little bit more, so it becomes a little more pocket specific up in the glacier areas where you start finding more of those Glacier National Park area, Flathead Lake, and that sort of thing. Just to satisfy more international, actually more than anything. And what's interesting about like Fargo, they call that the gateway to the West because, man, you got to go to like Bismarck, Billings, Idaho, state of Washington. I mean, Seattle. That's it. That's like your whole drive, man. I mean, when you get through there. So it's important to get out to these different areas. So glad that you made it out there. And was there some positivity out in Montana on things happening? Because they just had some pretty good luck in the White House with some movement to get them going. They're kind of in the middle politically. They got a lot of left and a lot of right. So anyway, so not to get into too much details, but was there a lot of positivity out of there?
I don't know if I could speak to the figurative temperature of positivity, negativity out there, Jason, but I could speak to the literal temperature because it was, I think, 100 degrees on two of the days that I was out there.
Oh.
So it was a bit warm, but a good time, great state, and happy to be back here in Pittsburgh, though, especially in conjunction with all of the figurative energy that came out of that summit there that occurred at Carnegie Mellon.
Carnegie Mellon. All right. Then we got the Steelers opening up camp. I got that in my notes because I think the San Diego Chargers opened up yesterday. I saw in my news headlines. So I know things are moving and things are happening. Let's do a plug here for your latest podcast, as well as how people can get in touch with you and do some business with you if they want to have some coaching done and get them over that hump that they have going.
Great. Well, in terms of the latest podcast episode there, episode 116 of the Energy Detox, I recorded it the day after the big energy summit, but I didn't try to do a big recap there. Again, there's enough articles, there's enough coverage of it. I honed in on some comments that Mike Rowe made about the need to showcase all of these jobs that are in demand now and will continue to be in demand, especially as it relates to skilled labor in the trades. And basically turned his comments about the macro environment of workforce needs to bring it back to individual leaders and individual teams, Jason, who in many cases don't do a very good job of showcasing what they do, showcasing their day-to-day efforts. They might talk in generalities, they might talk about the results of their work, but by and large, there's so many missed opportunities to actually show what they do and how they think and how they act. And so that was the last episode there, playing off of Mike Rowe's comments. And I guess the only other thing I'll say, Jason, and again, maybe this is a bit of a stretch here, but I think you mentioned Montana, that part of the world almost being the gateway to the West. However, you know, here in Pittsburgh, we also call ourselves the Gateway to the West. So I don't know how many gateways to the West there are, but interestingly enough, one reference that I didn't make but was on my mind yesterday as I recorded that podcast episode is I was actually standing outside one of the gates of the hockey arena here, PPG Paints Arena, thinking to myself, hey, you know, natural gas in many ways is the gateway to the future. In fact, it was the EQT gate, which is the, you know, big natural gas player here in this part of the world. But again, you can be the gateway to the future, but you still need the right resources to make it happen. That being people, right? You need the workforce. You can have the door wide open. You can have natural gas that is plentiful and available. But if you don't have the right pieces in place from a workforce standpoint, and of course, shameless plug, from a leadership standpoint, it's not going to happen. You're not going to fuel the future. That gate's just going to be swinging in the wind there. And, you know, the potential, the potential money, the potential impact is just kind of going to be standing there in front of a wide open gate, if you will. So again, maybe that's a segue into, you know, what I do for companies, whether they're based here in Western Pennsylvania or anywhere from coast to coast. And that is to help leaders think more consciously, act more effectively, and of course, you know, generate more bottom line results by identifying the things that might be causing them to unwittingly miss opportunities, and again, leave those gates, if you will, wide open, and in turn, you know, not help them or their companies or teams realize their full potential. So, you know, people are interested in learning more about, you know, exactly how I do that. Always happy to have that conversation, whether they reach out on LinkedIn, certainly can visit wittingpartners.com, WITTING, or, you know, give me a phone call there, 412-444-5563. I always enjoy a nice old fashioned phone call and conversation to, again, talk about some of the, in many cases, pretty straightforward, simple, but also proven ways to help leaders be more conscious, more effective, and again, you know, help them and their companies leverage the resources at their disposal.
I was just thinking that with all the different gateways to the West, I wonder if St. Louis is a great teachable moment on how to seize an opportunity, because they went ahead and just built a monument and said, "No, we're the gateway of the West, and we've got this half mile tall arch here that's actually a gateway to the West, so everybody else could talk the talk, but look at us. You know, we did economic development out of our deal here." I mean, and it's a tourism thing now too. So I just kind of was thinking about it. Hey, folks, that's how you seize an opportunity, just like that.
And hey, one final comment, Jason, you know, kind of pulling things full circle here. Mike Rowe, who again, we've talked about, and he was in town just a couple days ago. His big point is we need to be better storytellers. So maybe we take a page from St. Louis, who again, recognized the need to tell a better story, to actually take action and not assume that, you know, just because you think you're the gateway to the West, it's going to happen organically and naturally. So again, let's take a page from Mike Rowe from either from a marketing standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, from a communication standpoint, and remember the importance and the power of storytelling.
It's exactly right, but you got to remember that, you know, the campfire is fine, but the illustration sometimes does help us too with a story. You know what I'm saying? Because that's again back to you got to look good to play the part. So, all righty, my man. Let's see. Next time, let's talk about what I would like to ask you for next time. Just a preview, a little Steelers talk here because this is pertinent, Joe. So this is homework here. Aaron Rodgers is coming in as your quarterback, and he's past his prime, but he's a veteran, and he's all, I mean, there's all these different things that are going on. So he's got a lot of positives and he's got a lot of negatives. But the reality is he's not the same person that he was 15 years ago. And I'm not saying that for him, I'm saying that for the rest of the world around him, that in today's day and age, sometimes we bring in somebody like a Jason Spies who has 30-year media experience, and all of a sudden I'm looking at a piece of software and saying, "Well, what's this? Oh, this is how you StreamYard everything." And I'm using myself as an example, but you know, it's a piece of software like StreamYard, for example, that goes to all your platforms at one time, so you don't have to spend a day uploading to 15 different platforms. Something like that brings in that experience, for example. So that's the kind of stuff I wouldn't mind talking about, how analytics has changed not only in sports, but it's changed in oil and gas. So there's a lot of parallels here. And so, folks, I just want to do a little of a bit of a preview that there is a, you know, there's a changing of the guard that happened. Something like 75 to 80% of the industry retired over the last 10 years. We have, it might even be 90%. So we have a whole new crop of people. And now a lot of them are getting called back out of retirement because maybe their numbers aren't matching like they used to. And hey, let's bring John back. He always knew how to fix the books. And guess what? It's a problem John can't fix. It's a problem that his grandson can fix. And so anyway, yeah, we'll flush that out a little bit, because actually I think that's going to be pertinent going into the annual meeting season, as that starts. Oh, I call it October, but actually it probably starts September, now that I'm looking at the books a little bit. I was at the dog park, and the gal working at Fleet Farm said that they're bringing out the winter coats later. And I looked at her and I said, "You can leave now." So just kind of, I mean, they're already, Joe, they're already bringing the fall coats in and the winter coats. So it's not a good sign. You know, we got to start thinking ahead a little bit here. So anyway, I'll step down now. And last word, one more time. What should people do to get in touch with you, and et cetera, et cetera?
They can, again, reach out on LinkedIn, head to wittingpartners.com, or if you're so inclined, go find the Energy Detox podcast on YouTube, on your favorite podcast platform, or at theenergydetox.com to get a feel for the type of work I do, marrying energy and leadership and current events so that individuals can be more effective in what they do.
Thank you very much, Joe Sinnott, Jason Spies, hit and stop.